Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast, episode 253. My name is Rob Cope. I'm your host. And today we are talking to the incredible saxophone player, Tim Garland, about his new album, Moment of Departure, which is out on Ubuntu Music on the 3rd of May. Before we start the show, we're going to have a quick listen to a little bit of the first track of the album. This is Winds of Hope.
How are you doing?
I am very good, Tim. How are you?
Yes, excellent. Thank you. And thanks for inviting me on.
It is our pleasure. I'm delighted to have you. You are one of those guests on this podcast where we have been asked over and over again, either have we done Tim Garland yet? Or are you guys going to talk to Tim at some point? Or Tim would be a great guest for the show.
Oh, great.
So here we are.
I'm flattered. That's great.
Yeah.
Here I am.
The listeners have been clamoring, I tell you. We're here to celebrate your new album today.
Yay!
Yes, Moment of Departure, which is a real beauty from the cover, the music, the designs, everything about it.
Thank you.
So we're going to get into this. We're going to deep dive. But Tim, would you tell our lovely listeners a little bit about yourself?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, let's see. I studied composition at the Guildhall School of Music, moving up from Kent and then moving into London. It was shortly after that that I joined Ronnie Scott's band because I'd got into playing the tenor. So I kind of swapped from my obsession with composition to an obsession in the saxophone, which sort of, by a lot of people's standards, came quite late. So I had quite a lot of catching up to do. But ever since then, I've been looking for ways professionally to bridge together all the different ways there are of composition, which I love, and contemporary jazz and improvisation, which I also love to bits. So my two dual things, they're a bit like my two arms, you know. It's rather like if someone says, which one do you like best? You say, well, I kind of need them both, actually. Can we just leave it at that? So this album is just another sort of an extension of this ongoing fascination I've always had for over 30 years now. So I did a stint of teaching at Newcastle University and also at the Royal Northern in Manchester, which I know you know well, and as well as continued teaching at the Royal Academy in London. And one of the big reasons I continue to teach is because I just get my ass kicked by all these amazing students I keep hearing, you know. And it's wonderful. And I'm still having trouble keeping up with all the amazing stuff. I'm surprised sometimes when I catch myself in the mirror and think, oh, yeah, I don't look like a student anymore. But I was fortunate enough to work with Chick Corea for on and off for about like 17 years or more. So I certainly did my fair share of traveling around and playing with some of the greats, which, of course, kicked my ass again, which is wonderful. And so I've always been one of those players, I suppose, who's felt that the writing side of things is equal. It's not to the playing and the performing. It's there isn't a gap. There isn't one which is superior to the other. They sort of just come completely hand in hand with each other. So that's me. That's my musical side.
Tell us about, let's quickly for some of our listeners who maybe don't know about the Chick career, because it's a really amazing thing to have done. How did it come about that you ended up in his band and playing his music?
I have been for many years a great friend of Joe Locke, the vibraphone player. And I decided, you know, it was time for me to meet a few people. And Joe was saying, come over to New York and I'll introduce you to some people, you know. So my album, Enter the Fire, from 1995, 96, that had just come out on CD. This was before streaming, folks. This was, it feels like an awfully long time ago, the last century. And that had we were all young, but Jason Rebello featured on that quite a lot. And I took a couple of copies over with me. Billy Childs, who is a very dear friend of mine, I met for the first time at Joe's. In fact, when I arrived from the airport, I had been at Joe's, who was in sort of midtown Manhattan there, about 20 minutes, I think, and then the bell rang and Billy had arrived as a nice surprise from California. So he had traveled almost as far as me to sort of meet randomly in this random rendezvous. And the album was already playing, because the first thing that Joe said to me was, hey, you know, put this new album on. And so I did. And Billy walked in and says, oh, have you got another copy? I've got someone who'd love this. I must give it to them. I'm like, oh, sure. You know, I didn't know, of course, at the time, but that was Chick. So my connection with Chick was made about 20 minutes after entering Joe's flat.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it's a great story, isn't it? And it was a whole year after that, I think, that Chick's manager suddenly got in touch and said, look, you know, oh, and there's my phone. That's not your professional, is it? Hang on, I'll turn it off.
It's like I said, this is all about the realism, this show.
Right. Okay. So, it was about a year, and then Chick's manager got in touch and said, Bob Shepherd's, you know, dropping out of the band Origin. We're about to go on tour in Europe. Do you want to do this? And this was about 4 days after my son was born, actually, I think. What? So I was just there in time. And then I went off and we had 30 dates in Europe, 30 gigs, and in 31 days. So there was barely really a day off, and it was just flying every day. So I barely got to rehearse. But I mean, the band, it was just fantastic. It was Avishai Cohen and Jeff Ballard on drums and bass. Terrific. And Steve Davis and Steve Wilson on, you know, alto and trombone. And I still remember, you know, it took me a while before I was confident enough to go on stage without the music somewhere. I had the written music down near the floor, you know, because I had to join and then immediately go to the set, playing flute, bass, clarinet, tenor and soprano. So it was kind of a lot all at once. But we got on particularly well, I think, because he, as you will no doubt know, was an amazing composer and had a lifelong passion for composition and saw that in me. So we used to talk not just about jazz, but about, you know, classical music and classical composers, which we both liked, and the ways of notation, all that stuff, you know. So we had a lot of airport chats, and that helped. I ended up doing quite a lot of sort of orchestrations and things like that for him at one point as well. And it was the Vigil was the band that he formed in something like 2012, 2013, something like that. But I did a couple of the Spanish projects as well. So I was on about 4 or 5 different projects of his, all the time learning, all the time meeting new people, and Yeah, growing. When I think of what I was like when I first joined, you know, everyone thinks when they're, I don't know, 30 years old, that they're so mature and they've got it all together. It's like, it's so not true. You know, there's so much more. There's always so much more to learn.
This is good to know. I always think that the commanders of the space station are typically in their 50s. You know, astronauts are in their peak around that age because of the maturity and the intelligence. So I keep telling myself when I'm like 50s, that it better be good, you know, because otherwise I might have to admit that there's just not a lot in there. But
no one wants to hear that, like, you know, if you reached your peak at about 30, if you were 35 and someone said, oh, well, you know, of course, it's all downhill from now, or you're not as good as you used to be. That's the last thing you want to hear. I mean, I remember hearing John Taylor, your great piano player, John Taylor, playing when he was about the age I am now, in sort of mid-50s. And I heard him, a recording of his when he was about in his late 20s. And he was noticeably, you know, more complete and amazingly commanding player in his 50s. And I was thinking to myself, yes, that's the right direction, because this guy's just going to keep getting better. And Chick was most definitely an example of that. So I say to myself, if this is a true art form that we're involved in, sure, it's entertaining and it's all the rest of it is about performance and having fun and et cetera, meeting people. A true art form should be something that you mature into over a long time, if it's going to have true depth. I think half the time you're growing more because you're building up this amazing amount of experience, and the other half you're shedding things, you're getting rid of the stuff you thought was you but you've grown out of, or you realized was never you, just a delusional. So you become more and more kind of sort of open to the moment in truth, you know. I think that's right, because I feel that in the players around me who I like playing with the best. They have amazing ears. Someone like Willem Simcock, for example, you know. And, of course, my soul buddy, Jason Rebello. So I've been very blessed by working with those two piano players.
That brings me on nicely to the album, because, of course, Willem features on your new Moment of Departure CD. So tell us a little bit about, and it's really interesting to talk about Chick. That actually worked out great, because it's given so much context to where we are now today with this new release. And as we said before, it's the 20th anniversary of the Lighthouse Trio. And you're at this point, you describe John Taylor of, you know, like a maturity. I mean, it's stunning. It's an amazing, expansive and very ambitious album. And it's, you know, there's not that many double like CDs that really, I don't know, it's such a meaty, like I'm holding it up for the listeners on an audio show, which is no use to anybody.
But I can see it.
But there's a, yeah, we can enjoy this. There's a lot packed in here. It's coming out on the 3rd of May, and I've got loads of questions. But the first one is, can you tell us a bit about how you arrived at this lineup with the strings of the Britten Symphonia, Thomas Gould, Yaz Ahmed, you've got Asif Sarkis, Willem Simcock, we mentioned, you know, there's a lot going on. How does this all come together?
Sure, yeah. Well, 20 years ago, I came out with an album called If the Sea Replied.
And I remember that. I've still got my copy, actually, just
fantastic.
In the office.
Well, you'll hear some similarities, because I have always loved string orchestras. And I was working with the Northern Symphonia, the Royal Northern Symphonia, way up north in the Newcastle area, wanted to write a series of pieces which featured my bass clarinet playing, but also this wonderful sound of their string orchestra. It became evident halfway through writing that I didn't want to be the only jazzer. I wanted some people to nestle into the orchestra with me. I was living in Whitley Bay, where there's a very famous lighthouse, and some of the bass clarinet soloing actually was done inside the lighthouse there. So I didn't get the other guys there. We couldn't fit a grand piano into the lighthouse.
No, I do remember that, though, because it's got the most amazing reverb, really long, really big and all natural as well.
Very tubular. Yeah, very strange. So I really wanted to get an unusual band together, which could not only kind of exist within a string orchestra and, you know, inhabit it, not drown it out either, something which would be compatible and acoustic. Guillaume and Asaph were just perfect for that. And I realized very shortly after that we could gig. We didn't need the string orchestra. We could also gig as a trio. So the very genesis of that band was within a kind of orchestral remit. You know, it was very much my, you know, Captain Timbo, isn't it? It's, you know, thinking of, like, how can I spend lots of money? hire a string orchestra.
Yeah.
So, like, what we're doing here with Moment of Departure 20 years later is, of course, I have a big string orchestra and we're nestled in there just as we were 20 years on to, you know, it needed two albums. Two discs, because there are quite a few tracks where the trio are just playing alone as we would live. And in order to play with no bass player, you've got to have, you know, that register has to be taken care of handsomely. And it is, of course, with Guillaume's wonderful left hand piano. If you're playing on a 9-foot Steinway and you think how long those strings are, the beefiness of the left hand of the piano should in truth be enough, as long as you've got the talent as he has to be an amazing bass player, you know. Also with Asaph, we worked very hard on getting a particular kind of kit, because you can't just come in there with an ordinary, like, jazz fusion kit or something. You're going to miss the bass because the kit is so big and powerful. So Asaph had all these frame drums. You know, he was brought up in the Middle East with you know, all kinds of Arabic, Yemenite rhythms, Israeli rhythms, etc. And he was brilliant and very intuitive with, like, a bendir and a rick and these other small frame drums. So we replaced the drums with different size, you know, kind of animal hide drums, which look a bit like a tambour, you know, or a tambourine without all of the glittery bits. And tiny cymbals as well that didn't have much sustain. So in other words, then the drum kit, which played by him, is so full of vitality and life, but actually the decibel level is half the volume. So you can nestle him with the piano and with the strings and he won't drown everyone out. We found that we could just create this repertoire. All three of us have written for the band now, where it just sounds so complete. It sounds like an orchestra, you know. But it did take a while. I'd recommend people, you know, if they want to try and be creative with a group, try, instead of adding more people, if you've got, like, piano, bass, drums and saxophone, try removing something. You know, it's like whatever instrument, try, because it means that there are no passengers. It really stretches your imagination and it challenges you musically, because what initially may feel like something like a limitation, you'll find in the end that if you keep going with it, that limitation turns into a brilliant doorway into a different kind of expanded creativity, because there are never any passengers when there's just, like, three people, and you can go off at tangents all of a sudden, and, you know, it took us a while, and I have Guillaume to thank particularly, because his particular brand of virtuosity, and it shines on this album.
Yeah, he sounds amazing on that first track. It's just like, wham, here we go. You know, you get, like, hit by it like a force of nature straight away.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I'm, like, sweating in agreement, because I released my album in January, and as well as Bassless, and my first one was, and exactly like you say, like, having a part missing, and I have Liam Noble playing, and it gives him the freedom to just, like, make decisions without needing to, like, warn anybody, because there's no bass player. It's just like, okay, he's going over there. I can't follow, but it will sound cool if I try. you know. So I completely agree. It's an amazing sound. But what I've found a lot of is people saying to me, oh, this is unusual. Oh, my goodness, no bass player. I feel like it creates a kind of interesting reaction where some people are surprised, some people go along with it. Do you find that with this project as well?
We know we're doing things right when people don't notice. you know, because it sonically sounds fine. And that does depend somewhat on the mix of a live concert or whatever. You know, you've got to make sure that it sounds rich. So most often people are surprised to kind of, I suppose, to realize that there is, in conventional terms, something missing, because in reality, because there is nothing missing. I mean, we're not the first, certainly. I mean, look at Benny Goodman's, you know, radio band that didn't have a bass player. But it's, for us, I think it is compositionally important, because you can think in counterpoint, you know, in terms of conventional jazz. Quite often you've got the bass note and then a chord for that, and then a melody over that. Take away the bass note and all of a sudden there's something hugely missing. But if you think in terms of counterpoint, of strands, of simultaneous linear movement, I'm getting all technical here, then the ear is drawn to, rather like listening to a Bach two-part invention, you know. It's like, what's missing? There's nothing missing, because the counterpoint is so good, you know. I mean, there's some great jazz, examples of bands that didn't have a piano or whatever, and you know, what was the Chet Baker band? It's gone out of my head now, but there are lots of examples. So again, I think jazz is brilliant at drawing. It's so generous in what it draws from. So with Gwilym, like me, he's very interested in types of classical music. And so we don't have to kind of suddenly, you know, go into our bebop references or anything like that. The compositions quite often have quite a folky background, and we're just equally as comfortable improvising there. So to me, also, we've both learned a great deal from working with Asaf, because his kind of roots are in like jazz fusion, but he naturally brings to it this sensitivity, as I was saying before, of all of these Middle Eastern rhythms. And, you know, he taught me a Samai rhythm and other rhythms, and 7 and 11 and 13 and things like this, and makes them sound so natural that it felt perfect in a way to start to base compositions. And the very first one on If the Sea Replied was such a composition, which was based upon a rather sort of non-Western rhythm. And we've just developed from there in a straight line. So when we hadn't played for a little while and we rehearsed, and about 5 minutes in, it just suddenly felt, oh my God, you know, it's like we've just come off tour. It was absolutely without effort to play together again.
Such a nice feeling, that years of familiarity, years of working together, you know, and it's not like, doesn't feel rusty. You're just like, wham, here we go. I remember you.
Yeah.
So tell us what's coming up then with the album launch, gigs, anything that our listeners can look out for.
Yeah. Okay. Well, predictably, it's the trio which are out on the road. We're not kind of, you know, traveling with a huge orchestra. I should also mention at this point, Tom Gould, the great violin player, he's featured on the sort of second half of the album, which is really goes quite deeply into the more classical side of things. Tom, rather like the rest of us, loves to break away from the written page and join us with improvisation. And that's one big reason why I asked him, because it's essentially his feature on this album is a bit like a violin concerto, really. But all of the little joining interludes in the between all of the main movements, they're semi-improvised, you know. So the album launch, which is on the 30th of May at King's Place in London, also has a special guest, Tom, joining the trio, which is wonderful. And I suppose what's linking all of this together, because some people may listen to the album and say, well, that's not jazz. if we don't think of it in terms of that, but we think of what are all the ways where we leave the written page and jump into the unknown. That is the moment of departure. That is where we leave what we know and you know, have the faith to co-create together. Hence the title of the whole album. But before that album launch, we've got a couple of other gigs. We've got York and we've got Manchester Jazz Festival in May as well. I think 21st and 24th, respectively, I think. We've got about 16 or 17 dates throughout the year, all in the UK. And then I think we've got some gigs in Europe the following year. And one of the other big things about this is that the artwork, which you've commented already, is done by fine artist Ezra Kisiagokcin, a Turkish artist. And she's been commissioned to create a series of beautiful canvases, which we've photographed, and we're displaying them. So nearly all of the concerts will have a big digital display going on behind us playing. And her work, some of her work, actually the earlier work, was inspired some of my music. So it's a two-way thing. She's been influenced by me, I've been influenced by her. And she's a migrant from Turkey, and a lot of her artwork deals with her migrant experience, which is the other meaning of moment of departure, because it's that jumping into the unknown for a completely new life and what you leave behind culturally. So there's these conjoining of things. And that's another thing I'm really looking forward to, because I've never done anything like this before, where we're using these huge screens. So King's Place has a beautiful big digital screen. We'll be, you know, we're creating this lovely artwork where some of the artwork moves and morphs into each other, et cetera, sort of loosely choreographed, if you like, with what's going on live on stage. And the in November, long time, but with the last three gigs are with the Britain Sinfonia Strings and Tom Gould, which will be really, really special. Yaz Ahmed is also joining us later on in the year as well. Excited about that. It was so nice to ask Yaz, because I did a couple of tracks on her album, and I love her sound, and I wrote something with her in mind. Must have been 3 years ago. And then kind of had this light bulb moment. Well, she's the obvious guest, you know, let's do that piece. I wrote this for her.
Oh, that's so great.
That's called Sub Vita. It's the longest track on the album, I think, more or less. And she plays great on it. So the first time she's guesting with us isn't until September. So we have to wait a bit for that. She's a busy lady as well. So.
Oh, Tim, well, this is fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing all of your philosophies and thoughts and the history, and congratulations again on this stunning album. I'm going to play for the listeners a little bit of Sub Vita to finish, so they can hear what it is that you've got in store for us.
Great.
Brilliant. Lovely. Thank you so much, Tim.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Jazz Podcast. We will be back next week with a fantastic episode featuring the amazing Martin Hummel, the president, CEO and overlord of Ubuntu Music, who released Tim's album. And I want to get to know what it's like to be on Martin's side of the industry running a label, and just how does that go? What does that mean? So we'll hopefully see you then.